הגדולה אשר עשה השם במצרים ויירוה. The pursuit of HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to be premised upon the notion that it is an infinite pursuit after HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we can't fully uncover. It will forever remain a mystery. But a person, instead of being frustrated by that reality, should be ennobled by it. Should be challenged by it. Religion is meant to be transcendent. It's not meant to be redemption solely on human terms, but redeeming man by thrusting him into a different realm, interaction with the unknowable. And that is why developmentally, before we begin to appreciate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to uncover, to discover, to decode, before the strains and images of Parshat Mishpatim, Kol Asher Diber Hashem Na'aseh V'Nishma, before we start davening, Hashem Svatai Tivtach Ufi Agiti Yilatecha, before I attempt the unprecedented, before I have the audacity to speak about my God, before I have the courage to begin to describe Him as best I can, to pray to Him, Hashem Svatai Tivtach Ufi Agiti Yilatecha. We say every Shabbat, had my mouth been full of his praise, it would still be insufficient. Developmentally, Yira has to precede Ahava. Ahava is indeed the ideal, but the process has to be framed. Reishit Chochma, Yirat Hashem. And notice the juxtaposition of the word Chachma and Yira. Reishit Chachma. Very often, when we think of Yirat Shamayim, we think of raw piety, pure devotion, blind obedience. Yiras Hashem is a Chachma. There is meant to be the Yira of recognition, the Yira of transcendence, the Yira of awe, the Yira of acknowledging that unbridgeable gap, it has to be the product of Chachma. Reishit Chochma Yirat Hashem, Seichel Tov L'chol Oseihem. Our goal, our destination, is of course Ahavat Hashem. Oseh Ta'emet, Ibnei Shehu Emet. But we pass through the corridor of Yira in order to arrive at the palace of Ahava. Yira assures that we're building a relationship with a truly transcendent and authentic God. Not merely a comfortable and humanized version. And that's the second lesson of Parshat Yitro. Not just for a people susceptible to paganism, vulnerable at a very, very delicate stage in history. But as we calibrate the religious experience, we constantly think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, build that relationship, respond in moments of joy, reach out in moments of frustration. Someone once asked Rav Lichtenstein, how deep should your emunah be? Lichtenstein said, you should be capable of being chas v'chalila, the last Jew alive in Auschwitz, and walking out of there proud with your yira intact. Of course, we don't judge chas v'chalila those who weren't capable of chalila v'chas. History confounds us. We see events that we cannot decode, we cannot decipher. But Yira serves as the first stage. It frames the process. Finally, the prefatory nature of Yira ultimately assures not just developmentally sound religious experience, but consistency. Avash Hashem fluctuates. There are moments in our life, and let's be honest, we truly feel close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We can sense His presence as individuals or as a nation. We understand our world. We celebrate. We recognize the beauty the dignity of life. It has a purpose. But then there are moments that are sterile, that are dark, that are cold. What assures that religious observance can be sustained not only during moments of religious fertility, but during moments of religious sterility? And they exist, hopefully with diminishing frequency, but they exist. It happens when our life challenges us, or just our internal challenges, the emotional response, the emotional awakening just isn't there. Ahava is much more, I would say, inconsistent. It's a product of the human condition, of particular mood swings. Lahagid baboker chasdecha ve'emunatcha balilot. We all enjoy the morning of human intellect. Baboker chasdecha. We'll wake up to a bright, radiant world, bristling with the presence of Kodesh Baruch Hu. We sense it. It's almost palpable. I just got off of a plane. Sometimes when I'm in a plane, you feel that much closer to Kodesh Baruch Hu. You're above the clouds. A barrier has been removed. Especially during sunset. That's really spectacular. I almost feel like you could reach out and Kodesh Baruch Hu will pull you in. But then comes the evening, when the tents fold and human reason subsides. Of course, I don't just mean evening. I mean the evening of the human condition. Moments when we're perplexed. Moments we just don't grasp, where we feel inadequate or futile. What grants ourselves the courage and the rock-solid emunah to endure those nights? Emunas chabalelos. The rock solid, unwavering emuna in the Rabbona Shalom. And if anything, a deepening sense of his presence when we can't understand our world. As we become more dependent and less capable, sometimes our recognition of the Rabbona Shalom. We read last week of Parshas Amalek. So the description of Parshas Amalek in Parshas Ki Tetzeh, at the story of Amalek, Asher karcha baderech vayizanech b'chal kol hanechshalim acharecha v'ata ayef v'yageya v'lo yarei Elokim. What happens when you get tired? Some people, when they get tired, have less Yirat Shemayim. Some people, when they get tired, that's the passageway to Yirat Shemayim. Because the human system has deteriorated. The human world is no longer capable of solving mystery. Sham lo choku mishpat v'sham niso. Last week in Parshat B'Shalach, as a preparation for Har Sinai, we received a few practice mitzvot. One of them was dinim, to set up a judicial system. One of them was Shabbat. Religion sometimes is too difficult on a daily basis, but on a weekly basis, a little bit more acceptable for people training themselves. And one of them, of course, is Parah Adumah, to train ourselves to obey His will even when it confounds human logic. Rav Amital once told us that there was a couple in the process of converting, and they asked him how should they prepare for their conversion. So Rav Amital told them, keep Shabbos once a week, not too difficult. Take a mitzvah that you understand and keep it. Take a mitzvah that you don't understand and keep it. Based on the model of what happened in Mara. That's what he offered this. Because we were all in the process of conversion at Mara in Parshat B'Shalach. Yirat Hashem is more sustainable than Ahavat Hashem. At our greatest and most successful moments, we really do live up to the Rambam's creed of Osa ta emet b'nei shehu emet. That inner sense of rectitude, of seeing truth for all of its integrity and all of its existential rectitude. It's truly right, and that's the way we live our life. But then there are moments of weaker resolve, a more feeble conviction. And in those moments, we submit ourselves to the Rabboni Shel Olam's will because we know it to be a will that we can't grasp, but that is meant to redeem us nonetheless. And ironically, that is, of course, the climax of Avraham's career. Avraham had spent a lifetime proselytizing monotheism to a pagan world, smashing idols, smashing conventions, replacing them with the paradigm of monotheism. And somehow this mission, this crusade had been successful. Of course, in every country but Mitzrayim. Avraham failed in Mitzrayim, so we had to return to Mitzrayim to deliver the message. But he succeeded when he met Avimelech. He succeeded when he met Malkitzedek Melech Kohen. Those who were unable to appreciate his message were removed from the scene. Story of stone. Great success. His grand message, of course, the wedding of monotheism to Chesed. Avraham wore two hats and they weren't incidental. He was the great discoverer of Hashem as well as the great Baal Chesed of his era. Because his message was that believing in a transcendent God is meant to yield human progress and advance in technology. It's meant to improve the human condition. Look at our world. By and large, the cultures that have adopted monotheism are progressive, liberal forms of government, enlightened economies, higher health standards. And by and large, those cultures that are still mired in the paganism of antiquity are regressive, backward societies with inappropriate health care and tyrannical forms of government. That's Avraham's great message. Religion is meant to improve the human condition. By recognizing a higher being, human society should be improved. But Avraham had to face one final challenge. Can you interact emotionally with a God that you can't see? I know you can believe in that God, Avraham, but can you really, really feel love and fear for a God that you just can't touch, you can't talk to, you can't envision? And that final challenge played itself out during Akedat Yitzchak. Kachna bincha ki chidcha asher hafta v'lech lecha el eretz ha-moriya v'aleu sham alachad harim asher amari lecha. The unthinkable. And Avraham, of course, responds, brings Yitzchak to the point where he's about to sacrifice, throws not just Yitzchak on his back, but his entire career of chesed, of compassion, of pity, of sympathy. And what does Hashem respond to Avraham when he finally succeeds? So look for a second at source number 7. Bereshit Perek Chavdet Pasuk Yudbet. Vayomer Hashem says, Al tishlach yadcha el hanar, v'al tas lo me'uma, ki ata yadati ki yirei elokim ata v'lo chasacht et bincha et yichidcha asher haft mimeni. We normally associate Avraham's heroism at Har Moriah with Avat Hashem. But listen to the Torah. It's not Avat Hashem. It's Yiret Hashem. Avat Hashem bolsters our religious observance when we understand what Hashem wants from us. It's the Yiret Hashem that ultimately reinforces our resolve when we just can't make sense of it all. And Avraham couldn't make sense of that request, and he shouldn't have made sense of that request. Not that he couldn't, he shouldn't. For reconciling the command to kill his child is essentially counteracting or subverting everything that's human of a father and a loving, passionate human being. Ata yadati ki yirei Elokim ata. When we are asked to act heroically in the course of Jewish history or in the course of a personal history, We can't understand why HaKadosh Baruch Hu challenges us so. We're responding based on Yiras Hashem, the recognition that there is a justice, there is a reason that we just can't. We all stand at Har Moriah as people, as individuals, and now we are all standing at Har Moriah as a people, as a nation in Eretz Yisrael. And there's a Yiras Hashem that's necessary. Why so much bloodshed? Why so much terror? Why so much suffering? We are so civil. We are so noble. We are so caring. Look at what we've been subjected to. And here, of course, I return to the pasuk with which I began. Ve'ahavta Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha u'b'chol nafshecha u'b'chol me'odecha. Where is Yirat Hashem in this pasuk? The pasuk describes Ahavat Hashem. Ve'ahavta Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha u'b'chol nafshecha u'b'chol me'odecha. Where is there any mention of Yirat Hashem? The answer is in the famous drasha of Chazal, b'chol levavcha u'b'chol nafshecha, even if he takes your nefesh, afilu hu notil es nafshecha, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes a nefesh and we can't understand why, that is the moment that our Yirat Hashem surfaces. That is the moment that our Yirat Hashem shines. We don't know why, but we just accept. And we're silent. Vayidom Aharon. The loudest silence in history. Avram's sons, Nadav and Avihu, about whom we read a few minutes ago, are incinerated. That great moment of Hakamat HaMishkan, and Aaron's quiet. He resigns himself to recognizing that Hashem has some purpose that can't always be understood. As much as Ahavat Hashem constitutes that ideal that we strive for, that level of piety of synchronizing our will and Hashem's will, Yirat Shamayim provides the framework for that process, that we know that we will never truly understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We do our best to augment our knowledge, to increase our knowledge of Torah, our recognition of His essence, but we will never ultimately precisely define or know Him. But it doesn't only frame the process, it also solidifies and consolidates religious experience. Does not allow our Avodat Hashem to be susceptible to the vicissitudes of life and of history. We serve when we understand, and we serve when we don't understand. We try to understand more and more. And Abraham understood more than any of us. But his career ends at a mountain or a hilltop which he can't understand, and as I said before, shouldn't understand. It would be monstrous to think of Abraham understanding that he should kill his son. He just accepts HaKadosh Baruch Hu's command, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's dictate, and he performs. So ultimately, the chorus of Osa HaEmet, B'nei Shehu Emet, as the Rambam writes, should be our compass. It should be the driving force of religious experience. But healthy doses of Yirat Shamayim are crucial in steadying and reinforcing Avodat Hashem. As I said before, I believe, especially in the modern era, that Ahavat Hashem is something that's easier, that we feel more comfortable with, it's more recognizable. We feel, especially in light of recent historical events, I say recent, I don't mean the last 10 years, I mean the last 50 years, I feel that history is on the verge of winking at us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Od Avinu Chai, restore Jewish pride, restore it. One of the most religious moments of my life, not the most political, one of the most religious moments of my year, it was a few months ago when Israel sent a squadron of jets. Anyone remember this? They left from Israel a squadron of jets to fly over Auschwitz. 500 feet above the train tracks where Jewish blood was spilt and disgraceful, cheaper than dogs. And there was a group of Israeli emissaries standing on those train tracks, singing HaTikva, waving Israeli flags. Tikva le'amecha, Tikva dova le'dorshecha, Kavod le'amecha, Tiferet Gaon to Am Yisrael, which ultimately is pride and respect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As our stock rises, his stock rises. As our stock falls, his stock falls. HaKadosh Baruch Hu twinned himself to us. Ki chelek Hashem amo Yaakov chelo nachalata. When we suffer, the Shechina suffers. And when we celebrate and our pride is restored and we walk upright, kamiyot v'salichinu kamiyot li'artzeinu, Baruch Hashem, with all the suffering and all the precaution that we have to take, kamiyot, our grandparents are looking down at us and crying with joy. Crying and crying with joy. Kamiyot, if they could see a soldier, a Jewish soldier in a Jewish army, what would it mean to them? After running through 2,000 years of wilderness, fearing for their lives. There's a certain euphoria. There's a certain proximity. God is with us. We feel that HaMelech Basadeh, our king, has returned to the field of history. From a sociological, technological standpoint, we learn more about our world. Our world has shrunk into the size of a hand. What used to be an expanse that wasn't traversable. Man's voice carries from one part of the globe to the other. We've improved our condition to the point where the healthy confidence in our future, our ability to respond to crisis, to respond to suffering, to respond to poverty, with all the faculties of the collective wisdom of the last 400 or 500 years of human achievement, more or less since the Renaissance. But more and more, as I said before, as we uncover the skill to move mountains, we're quickly losing the faith that we need. Recognition that as much as we accomplish, some of you might know 2 days ago in Eretz Yisrael there was an earthquake. Very moderate earthquake, 5 on the Richter scale, Baruch Hashem, no one was seriously injured, no buildings were seriously. For once in a while, the firm, stable terrain under our feet begins to rock. We're sent subtle reminders. As much as we uncover, and as confident as we are and should be, there's still mystery. It's a mystery that's laced into the very fabric of Avodat Hashem. And that as we make our way through the religious odyssey, must constantly, constantly balance, constantly create that blend. And for each person, it's different. As ironic as it sounds, as paradoxical as it is, how can you love if you fear? How can you discover the undiscoverable? How can you desire to learn about the inscrutable? Well, one of the great legacies of the Rav Zecher Tzadik Livracha is that paradox in religious experience is not meant to be reconciled. It's meant to be sustained so that it enriches and complexifies religion rather than simplifies it. In complexity, there's richness. There's versatility. You respond to the Ribbono Shel Olam across manifold layers of the human condition rather than solely across one. And this is the supreme paradox of religious consciousness. These two emotions that are so seemingly contradictory. How, where, when, at what pace? Each individual determines in the quiet, hushed silence of his own heart, of her own heart. But chalila b'chas, we should lose the delicate balance between Yiras Hashem and Avas Hashem. If religion is meant to be an interface between man and God, without Avas Hashem, if we completely ignore our attempt to uncover Him, without confidence in our ability to reach out, without Avat Hashem, there is no man. Because we mute and paralyze ourselves to the point of oblivion. But without Yirat Hashem, there's no God. And religion, as an interface between man and God, has to be fortressed on both ends by healthy, comparable, interactive changes and doses of Avat Hashem and Yirat Hashem. May we all be zocha to be true Yirei Shamayim, to be true chachamim in our Yiras Hashem, to recognize that Yiras Hashem takes wisdom, knowledge. The more that we know, the more that we fear, the more that we know we don't know. Einstein was incalculably more aware of his ignorance in physics than I'll ever be, because he knew so much more than I'll ever know. The more we uncover, the more we stand in awe. The more that we separate the thicket, brush away the branches, we get to that precipice and we see an abyss beneath us that's infinite. And that's the pursuit of religion. And that's Mirtz Hashem, the great resonant 2 weeks that we have ahead of us. This week we'll read about Yirat Hashem. We'll begin by reminding ourselves, starting the process with a healthy recognition of the difference between man and God. And then in Mirtz Hashem, in a week's time, I hope to be back in Eretz Yisrael for that. In a week's time, our choral response of Nasa V'Nishma, Mirtz Hashem, will reverberate in our ears as it's reverberated through history. Our willingness to do and then listen. Nasa V'Nishma. First we'll obey, then we'll try to understand, and we'll make our every best effort to understand. Baruch Hashem, the Rabboni Shalom equipped us with minds. Today, sometimes, if you want to insult someone, the biggest insult you can give someone is calling him an intellectual. Not such an insult. Yisroch Baruch Hu gave you a very powerful organ, a very powerful mind to uncover, to discover, to think, to process, to analyze. And of course, the seed of religion is the human heart. The seed of religion is passion, faith, commitment. That's why, of course, we first put on our tefillin shel yad. And only afterwards put on our tefillin shel rosh. We kindle the religious process with our hearts, and then we employ our minds to ensure that it will be rich, profound, sophisticated, discerning, without chas v'chalila, abdicating that sheer piety, that raw religious devotion for which the heart is a fountainhead. Wish everyone a Shabbat Shalom. I look forward to seeing you on Shabbat.
All right. I don't know if there are any questions, but just let me say, Moshe Emet uTorato Emet, the Torah of Moshe, Rabbeinu, and of course Moshe Teragin is Emet, is true. And I know I commented when he was here in the summer that it's inspiring hearing somebody from the land of Israel, which is our true homeland, and we know that we are right. And the truth is, it's the homeland of the Jewish people. And when someone knows they have Emet with them, it's much more of a powerful moment and an inspiring moment. And let's hope that the Emet will be spread from the beginning to the end, just like in the Aleph Beis, it will be spread around the world. But if I may ask a brief question, I'm just curious, not that it's really a contradiction, but we know the famous Rambam that when it comes to rituals of keeping kosher, for example, the Rambam says a Jew should really want to say, I want to eat treif. The highest level of a Jew say, I want to eat treif, but I don't eat treif because God has told me. How exactly does that mix in of doing the truth because it's true and having a day off? In other words, it sounds like in that Rambam, if we had a day off, we should go eat treif. And it's only because God won't give us a day off we can't. I'm just interested if maybe you have any comments on that. Or I don't want to put you on the spot.
I mean, there's a fascinating section. There's a very, very imaginative sefer written by Rav Hutner, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Furtner was one of the most powerful thinkers of the last generation. Rav Lichtenstein is both the Talmud of the Rav and Rav Hutner. And he has a set of svarim known as the Pachad Yitzchak. And it's certainly very, very challenging sefer to read. His terminology is unconventional. It's based to some degree upon the Maharal. He has a very, very haunting piece on Rosh Hashanah. And his section on Rosh Hashanah, should the goal of a tzaddik be to eliminate freedom of choice or to sustain it? Right? Should we value the sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the constant freedom to decide? Or would we aspire to a world in which the Yitzhara would be abolished? For if the Yitzhara would be totally abolished, then our service would be less glorious, would be less powerful, would be less heroic. And when Rabbi Kelman mentioned that question, sort of invoked that image of Rav Hutner's, and he leaves it as a question. Some of the most valuable insights in life are unanswered questions, you know, if they're reconciled, every question we have. I think that that Rambam that you mentioned represents maybe a more primary instinct. A person should seek to sustain freedom of choice, and that in every act of restraint and constraint, there's sort of an innate desire that I don't want to abolish so that I can constantly confront it and conquer it. And therefore, as I confront, as I did in so many airports this week, delayed flights and many people enjoying their food, and I was left starving in a quiet corner, or davening in a quiet corner. So I don't try to deceive myself into thinking that the food would be untasty. That there is a sort of a visceral response, but at a much more systematic level, if I ask myself, not do I want to eat that food at this moment, or a much more general level, the lifestyle that I'm committed to. I don't know that this is necessarily an adequate answer to your question, but I'm not necessarily sure the two Rambams are contradictory. I don't want to abolish freedom of choice, but I certainly want to recognize that in the overall lifestyle, there is an inner logic that doesn't have to be justified by an afterlife or by the next world. Or to say it differently, in the constant response and conquest of appetite and desire lies a nobility that's self-sustaining. And my constant attempt to overcome desire that exists, that challenges me, that seduces me, that I recognize, that's the product of a rich person. The product of someone who appreciates beauty, who appreciates life, who celebrates life. If I celebrate life, I celebrate beauty, and I celebrate, there's a very, very provocative Yushalmi in the end of Kiddushin. Asid Adam Litein Din V'cheshbon. One day I'll get to Shemayim, you're going to have to be held accountable for what? So we know the Gemara and Shabbos. Did you learn enough Torah? Were you ethical? Did you participate in redemption? Mara says in Yishalmi, Asid Adam Litein Din V'cheshbon Al Kol Ma Shara Eina V'lo Nehneh Mimenu. Anything that your eyes saw that you didn't take, that you didn't eat, that you didn't enjoy, you'll have to give it Din V'cheshbon. You didn't eat sushi. I haven't eaten sushi yet. You didn't taste my sushi, Hashem will say. How could you? How dare you? I guess I'll be on the spot. I don't really like sushi. You didn't taste sushi, what taste, what delectability, what I imagine, I can only imagine. So Hashem placed us in this world to recognize, and through so many different avenues and so many different vistas, that necessarily gives birth to appetite and to interest and to curiosity. So not only do I choose to sustain it so that my choice will be courageous, but the sustenance of appetite is a byproduct of a rich lifestyle. But in the constant response and conquest of appetite lies the self-sufficient nobility of the lifestyle that the Rambam describes. In the constant ability, you know, a lifetime, the Gemara in Sukkah says, in Daf Nun Beis, Nun Beis Amud Aleph, Asid HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lishchot Avod Yetzihara. Asid Lavo Hashem is going to slaughter the Yetzihara in front of the Rishayim and in front of the Tzadikim. Halalu Bochim V'Halalu Bochim. They'll each be crying. The tzaddikim will be crying tears of joy. The rishayim will be crying tears of agony and distress. The rishayim will be crying tears of agony. It's a chut hasara, it's a little twig. We could have snapped it so easy. It's the yitzhara, you know, a little this, a little more, a little. You know, there are two schools of Musa in the 19th century. The first school of Musa, we saw Salanter. Man is futile, feeble, meaningless. The world's a trial. The world's a facade. Don't pay any attention to this world. Don't pay any attention to human technology, human productivity. This whole world's a false trial or a false world only as a trial to help you get to the next world. And as a response to that world, the Slabatka school of Musar developed, which stressed not afsuta adam, the meaninglessness of man, but gadlut adam, the glory of man. And in Slobodka, there was a two-word phrase that was the constant refrain from the Rebbeim to the Talmidim. How should you refrain from Chet, from Avera? Pasnisht. Look at that phrase, Pasnisht. You're too noble. You're too dignified. Look at what you're sacrificing. It's not worth it. Passing, fleeting, temporal, it's all pass, a little fade. Pasnisht. The Rishon Salanta response would have been, how dare you, this world is meaningless. But there was like a nobility that the Slobodka world would be so, the Elder from Slobodka, and all those, much of modern Musar has been influenced by the Musar of Slobodka. Pasnisht, there's too many more important things to attend to than to fall victim to this passing, fleeting, sort of transient experience. I think that, you know, that there's a certain glory that Avraham suggests, but not in the abolition of freedom of choice, but in the constant conquering. And as I said before, I'll continue the Gemara and Sukkah, the tzaddikim are crying because they see the Yetzer Hara as this mountain that they've climbed up throughout a lifetime. And how high the mountain was, a lifetime of care, a lifetime of vigilance, a lifetime of safeguarding. But through careful, gradual, confident approach, we surmount the mountain. And surmounting the mountain, we reach the top of that glory. So, I think it's a great question.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. There are our refreshments. We hope to see you in about 2.5 weeks. Daphna Siegman, who is even younger than Rav Moshe, I think you know her, I'm sure, who is a wonderful scholar, will be here. And that's Sunday night, the 29th of February. Every 4 years, we have a program on the 29th of February. And following that, Menachem Liebtag will be here the 21st of March, doing a Yom Iyun on the Haggadah. It's sooner than we think. He'll be speaking in the morning and at night. And a week later, J.J. Schechter, Rabbi Schechter of the Soloveitchik Institute, will be here most likely Sunday morning. I spoke to him on the phone today, probably Sunday morning in terms of his schedule, the 28th of March. I'll be sending emails. I hope everybody's on the email list. And have a good Shabbos, and thank you very much.
It's always good to have text. I didn't feel it. I probably hadn't. That's why I said, go here. The time is in 4 months.
No, no, no. Go pick up time.